On the day of Pope Francis's death, this Easter Monday, April the 21st, 2025, we pay homage to the man, the pastor, the pontiff, as tributes flow in from every sector of the church and society. In the Vatican, I'm Linda Bordoni. The Holy Father, Pope Francis, died on Easter Monday, April the 21st, 2025, at the age of 88 at his residence in the Vatican's Casa Santa Marta. At 9:45 a.m. local time, Cardinal Kevin Farrell, Camerlengo of the Holy Roman Church, announced the death of Pope Francis from his residence with these words: "Dearest brothers and sisters, with deep sorrow I must announce the death of our Holy Father Francis. At 7:35 this morning, the Bishop of Rome returned to the house of the Father. With immense gratitude," he continued, "for his example as a true disciple of the Lord Jesus, we commend the soul of Pope Francis to the infinite, merciful love of the one and triune God." The director of the Holy See Press Office, Matteo Bruni, told journalists later in the morning that the Pope's body would be transferred to St. Peter's Basilica on Wednesday morning so that the faithful may pray before his mortal remains. The Pope was discharged from Rome's Gemelli Hospital on Sunday, the 23rd of March, after 38 days of treatment for bilateral pneumonia. In April last year, Pope Francis had approved and updated an edition of the liturgical book for papal funeral rites, which will guide the funeral mass, which has yet to be announced. This second edition of the Ordo Exequiarum Romani Pontificis introduces several new elements, including how the Pope's mortal remains are to be handled after death. According to Archbishop Diego Ravelli, Master of Apostolic Ceremonies, the late Pope Francis had requested that the funeral rites be simplified and focused on expressing the faith of the Church in the risen body of Christ. The renewed rite, the Archbishop explained, seeks to emphasise even more than that the funeral of the Roman Pontiff is that of a pastor and disciple of Christ and not of a powerful person of this world. Meanwhile, all faithful and men and women of goodwill are invited to follow the rosary prayer for the repose of the soul of Pope Francis, which will be streamed live from St. Peter's Square on Monday evening at 7 p.m. local time. This will be live streamed on all of our platforms, so you can follow us on our website at Vatican VA, on Facebook, on X and Instagram. And now Thaddeus Jones brings us more about the life and pontificate of Jorge Mario Bergoglio.
Pope Francis, Jorge Mario Bergoglio, was the first pope of the Americas, coming from Argentina. Elected pope at the age of 76, the then Archbishop of Buenos Aires, also a Jesuit, was a prominent figure throughout the continent. Yet he remained a simple pastor who was deeply loved by his diocese, throughout which he traveled extensively on the underground and by bus during the 15 years of his episcopal ministry. Archbishop Bergoglio said more than once, "My people are poor, and I am one of them," explaining his decision to live in an apartment and cook his own supper. He had always advised his priests to show mercy and apostolic courage and to keep their doors open to everyone. And when he spoke of social justice, he called on people to read the Catholic Catechism, to rediscover the Ten Commandments and the Beatitudes. His project was simple. If you follow Christ, you understand that trampling upon a person's dignity is a serious sin. He was born in Buenos Aires on the 17th of December in 1936, the son of Italian immigrants. His father, Mario, was an accountant employed by the railways, and his mother, Regina Sivori, was a committed wife dedicated to raising their five children. He graduated as a chemical technician and then chose the path of the priesthood, entering the diocesan seminary of Villa Devoto. In 1958, he entered the novitiate of the Society of Jesus, and on the 13th of December in 1969, he was ordained a priest. In 1992, Pope John Paul II appointed him an auxiliary bishop of Buenos Aires, and on the 3rd of June in 1997, he was appointed coadjutor archbishop of Buenos Aires. Just 9 months later, he succeeded the cardinal there as Archbishop Primate of Argentina and Ordinary for Eastern Rite Faithful in Argentina. 3 years later, Pope John Paul II named him a cardinal in 2001, and at that time he asked the faithful not to come to Rome to celebrate his creation as a cardinal, but rather to donate to the poor what they would have spent on the journey. As Archbishop of Buenos Aires, a diocese with more than 3 million inhabitants, he conceived of a missionary project based on communion and evangelization. He had four main goals: open and brotherly communities, an informed laity playing a lead role, evangelization efforts addressed to every inhabitant of the city, and assistance to the poor and sick. He aimed to re-evangelize Buenos Aires, taking into account those who live there, its structure, and its history. He was elected Pope on the 13th of March, 2013, taking the name Francis. I'm Thaddeus Jones.
Messages of tribute have been flooding in, and one of the organizations who has joined its voices expressing prayers and love for the Pope is Caritas Internationalis. In an interview with Vatican Radio, Secretary General Alistair Dutton shares memories of his personal meetings with the Pope.
Well, I think from the very first days of his pontificate, Pope Francis was very clear that his vision for the church was a simple church, a poor church for the poor. And the poor and the most marginalised in society were always at the forefront of his mind. Once when we met him very early in his pontificate, I think it was 2013, he described Caritas as the tenderness of the church for the poor, which has always been a very precious memory to me. I think it showed the great value he placed on the poor, but also on Caritas's work for the poor. And you saw that then playing out throughout the next 13 years. I think, you know, we remember with great fondness the Year of Mercy and the emphasis he put on compassion and love for those who suffer and are on the margins of society. And mercy not in some abstract sense, but also in the works of mercy and the works of charity. And he was also, of course, a huge advocate for not only social justice, but environmental, ecological justice. And in Laudato Si, he said, this isn't two separate crises, there is one crisis, and it is a crisis of humanity to take seriously the love for pain and suffering in our midst, whether that's human beings or the rest of nature and creation around us. I had the privilege of meeting Pope Francis on a number of occasions, sometimes individually or just in ones and twos. And I always enjoyed his company. He had a wonderful sense of humour, but he didn't let you off the hook. His was a very real and urgent faith that really understood the urgency of the gospel message. And I think, you know, that will always stay with me. I remember him with great fondness and great gratitude. And obviously, today we just pray for the repose of his soul.
And that was Alistair Dutton, Secretary General of Caritas Internationalis, speaking there to Kelsey Gussey about Pope Francis's legacy. The death of Pope Francis, of course, has sent waves of sorrow across continents and communities. From heads of state to religious leaders, tributes have been pouring in for the man who walked with the poor, prayed with the suffering, and fought tirelessly for the hope of peace in our fractured world. Francesca Merlo reports.
Messages of grief came pouring in from the leaders of numerous African countries, a continent to which the Pope made several journeys. Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed praised the Pope's legacy of compassion and service to humanity. Nigeria's President Tinubu called him a voice for climate action, while South Africa's President Ramaphosa remembered his deep commitment to a better world. All praised his focus on inclusivity and justice. The UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres hailed what he called Pope Francis's historic influence as a voice for peace and human dignity. In Europe, tributes came from all corners. Amongst these, King Charles recalled their recent, moving and meaningful meeting. Flags are flown at half-mast across royal residences. And in East Timor too, the nation's flags will be lowered to half-staff for a week. President José Ramos Horta, who welcomed the Pope to the nation in September 2024, described Francis's death as a global loss. Argentina's president, Javier Milei, saddened by the death of the first Argentine pope, praised the pope's focus on interreligious dialogue and encouragement of spirituality amongst the young. And religious leaders too, of course, are mourning the pope. The Moscow Patriarchate acknowledged his role in building East-West dialogue, and Egypt's Coptic Orthodox Church mourned Pope Francis, calling him a true example of Christian humility. As the world begins to prepare for his funeral, messages continue to arrive. In life, he was a pastor to many, and in death, he is being mourned as a moral voice for all. "The best tribute we can pay to him," said the Dalai Lama, "is to be a warm-hearted person, serving others wherever and in whatever way we can." I'm Francesca Merlo.
Of course, we will be continuing to bring you tributes of church leaders and world leaders in the coming days. Meanwhile, the death of a pope, as all media is commenting on, sets a chain of events in motion, some dating back hundreds of years. Traditions mark the moments from the pope's passing and his funeral to the start of the conclave and the election of his successor. But what actually goes on in the Vatican during the sede vacante, or MTC? To answer this question, Kelsey Garci tells us more.
Following the announcement of Pope Francis' passing this morning, the bells of St. Peter's Basilica tolled. The next step is for the Pope's body to be dressed in papal vestments and moved to St. Peter's Basilica for pilgrims to pay their respects. In the days or weeks following the Pope's death and before the election of his successor, there is a period where the College of Cardinals takes charge of the Universal Church. While they have all the civil power of the Pope, they cannot make significant decisions or decrees. According to Pope John Paul II's Apostolic Constitution, Universi Dominici Gregis, a papal burial will take place, except for special reasons, between the fourth and sixth day after the Pope's death. At this time, St. Peter's Square is once again a sea of pilgrims, where they flock to bid the Pope a final farewell. The solemn funeral mass is presided over by the Dean of the College of Cardinals. Following the mass, the late pope's remains are taken to his chosen place of burial. For the pope of the peripheries, his burial rites will be different from previous popes. In 2024, Pope Francis revised the funeral rites for his death, simplifying them and enabling him to be buried outside the Vatican walls. For him, he chose the Basilica of St. Mary Major, and he will be the first pope to be buried outside Vatican City State in more than a century. Another change is the fact that Pope Francis will not be placed on an elevated platform for the wake in St. Peter's Basilica. Instead, he will be on view in a simple coffin, which, another change, is that it will be a single one made of wood and zinc instead of three different coffins. And all this takes place as a chain of events set in motion following the death of the Pope. I'm Kelsey Gussie.
As mentioned, all faithful are invited to follow the Rosary prayer for the repose of the soul of Pope Francis, which will be streamed live from St. Peter's Square on Monday evening. It will be presided over by Cardinal Gambetti, Archbishop of St. Peter's Basilica. Of course, you can follow that event on all of our platforms, so do follow us on Vatican.va, on Facebook, X, and Instagram. And that's all for this edition of Vatican and World News. My thanks go to Daniele Giorgi in studio. In the Vatican, I'm Linda Bordoni.